If it's nerdy, we're into it.
Gaming, movies, television, wrestling, comics, whatever. We are Kyle Eckert and Chris Heck, two lifelong friends with a passion for the world of geekery.
And this is the Geek Ketchup Podcast.
What's good, Geek Ketchup listeners? I'm Kyle Eckert.
And I'm Chris Heck.
And you are listening to another Geek Ketchup Wrestling Recap, a spotlight series where we break down the action from the biggest pay-per-views from the world of professional wrestling. In this recap, we're breaking down the granddaddy of them all. Of course, I'm talking about WWE WrestleMania 37. The two-night event took place on April 10th and 11th, 2021, at Raymond James Stadium in Tampa, Florida. With a limited in-person fan attendance mixed with a mostly virtual audience, WWE took it back to the originally planned venue for 2020's Mania, which was altered to a crowdless environment at the WWE Performance Center. Before we ring the bell, though, we wanted to take a moment to say thank you for listening, and if you haven't already, check us out on social media. Geek Ketchup Podcast on Facebook and YouTube, at Geek Ketchup Pod on Instagram and Twitter. Links to all of these accounts are available on our website, geekketchuppodcast.com. There's even a link to our Patreon and PayPal accounts if you'd like to support the show. Of course, if you already follow us and would like to help spread the love of geekery, we ask that you leave us a review on your favorite podcasting platform and share us with your friends and family. Now let's get to it. After over a year of virtual crowds, WWE was, quote, back in business for WrestleMania 37. As noted before, the decision was made to return to Florida for the event, as it was previously announced that Mania would be held at SoFi Stadium in California. Essentially, they did a repeat of the 2020 pirate theme, and while there was some criticism on WWE for their build to the Showcase of the Immortals, the end card was still very impressive. It featured 14 matches with 7 titles on the line, and since there is so much to cover, you'll have to excuse us a little bit that in the interest of time, we're not going to give every single match the full treatment, but we'll jump right into the main show action, which of course was delayed by that Gulf Coast weather. But Chris, in my opinion, it actually was a bit of a blessing for WWE because it forced all of the performers to do these impromptu backstage segments and interviews that were clearly not scripted. And we finally got to see a couple WWE performers go unscripted and prove that they could do it.
Yeah, that was definitely interesting. And it was a little awkward at first, and you could tell some were doing better than others. But to your point, I actually had two other friends that are wrestling fans that were watching Mania, and they said, oh man, the return of impromptu promos. So it was noticed by many because, of course, WWE has been pretty much fully scripted outside of an occasional guy here and there for years.
Yeah, for a really long time. So it was awesome to see, you said it perfectly, some really shined while others were like, ooh, you do need that scripted promo. But it, nonetheless, I thought it was cool. You know, it was a bit sad to see things not getting started with a bang because the pirate ship looked amazing. Raymond James Stadium looked amazing. The whole setup, and like after a year of virtual crowds, everyone was ready to go. But then, you know, Mother Nature had her way.
Yeah, the entire setup, the stage, the stadium looked fantastic. And that's nothing new to WWE. But this year, you could tell that they really went all out. I mean, the augmented reality with the giant pirate skeleton coming like over the top of the stadium was super cool. And I wasn't huge on the pirate theme, I got to admit. I was not really feeling it last year. And then seeing them bring it back, I was kind of like, not my favorite. But what they did with the AR and stuff looked great. And then even, just got to give a shout out to bringing in the drones, like the coordinated drones for certain people on their entrances over the night sky was a cool touch. And then they had more pyro than I can ever remember. I mean, WrestleMania is known for having some good fireworks displays, but even like the referees got fireworks displays in this weekend. So
everyone got it, which is awesome because it's Mania. You want everyone to have a huge, awesome entrance.
Yeah.
You know, and in years past, they've just kind of, I think they didn't spend the money that they could have spent, you know, and some people just got that AR or they lit up the entrance ramp a little bit, but they,
right.
Some people got some pretty cool entrances, and the people that deserved pyro got it.
Yeah, and you could tell that they leaned into it. Like, they almost even knew what was going on or how people would perceive it. Because at the end of last night, and time of recording, you know, Mania ended last night, when Bayley came out, and even she was just like, just hit my pyro, ha 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 ha, just because it was like everybody got pyro. She wasn't even wrestling, but yet she gets this massive display, you know, right before the main event match. It was awesome just to see it going bigger after COVID, no fans. I mean, just seeing them literally go all out across the board, it gave me the feels as a wrestling fan, because it was like, okay, this is WWE, this is Mania, we're back here.
Oh, yeah. Well, and speaking of getting the feels, I will say our very first night one matchup was the WWE Championship, Bobby Lashley, the current champion, taking on Drew McIntyre. And Drew McIntyre got to walk through that curtain first, and the feels, man, the energy got me. He was so hyped to be in front of that crowd. I was so hyped for him to be in front of that crowd. The man's had the company on his back for the past year. I'm not sure anyone else on the roster deserved that moment than Drew McIntyre.
He definitely deserved it. I still felt a little bad for him, because one negative of the weather delay, I thought, was that it probably tampered down the excitement. Because, you know, when you're at a live crowd, and we've all been somewhere where it's been rained out, like, you know, when you first get there and everything's like, okay, here we are, there's that electricity. And then if you have to do that delay or wait, it doesn't matter where you are, some of that energy is coming down. So the pops weren't as loud as I expected when he first came out, or anybody would have been the first person to come out.
Right.
But I think then after that, you know, especially with how good this match turned out to be, I think the energy picked back up. You know, the whole crowd got in there finally, and then we were off to the races.
Yeah, maybe some people were off getting a drink or getting popcorn and finally making their way back to their seats after that rain delay. So not all 35,000, I believe, were in
attendance. 25 or 35,000, something like that. Yeah,
something like that. You know, despite being an 80,000-seat stadium, you know, they brought in 30,000 on each night. But yeah, you're right. Once this match got going, these two, I say it all the time, two big beefy boys, you know, two big hosses doing hoss things, and that's exactly what this match was. Two just houses of human beings just throwing each other all over the ring. We saw a ton of massive shots, whether it was, you know, Drew going full, I would say, Brock Lesnar with his belly-to-belly overhead throws.
Oh, yeah.
They went outside. Lashley did a big dive. You know, they were trading submission holds all throughout the match. You know, we got to see hurt locks, and we got to see just massive slams. Like I said, these are just two massive human beings, and that's kind of the best way to describe this match. It was 18 minutes, which, you know, you would think it started a little slow, but they built it perfectly.
Right.
As they took each other to the outside, they threw each other into the side paneling, into the ring posts, into the steps, and they were just kicking the crap out of each other.
Yeah, I expected this match to be pretty good, but historically I'm not the biggest Bobby Lashley fan.
Right.
I have to admit, though, I think that this almighty version of him is the best one that I've seen of him.
Yeah.
You know, that entrance with the gold lightning and everything is just fantastic. Everything with the Hurt Business is pretty much on point right now. But to your point, like, I had in my notes here that this was the best kind of big man match.
Yeah.
Simply because you have two guys that are legit heavyweights in every sense of the word, but are also extremely athletic.
Yeah.
You know, they both have speed. They both have power. And we saw a match here that put everything on display. Technical wrestling, submissions, suplexes, power moves, corner works. I mean, anything you could think of, they put together in a quality 18 minutes here. And it was a perfect start to the weekend, in my opinion. It set the tone. It got the crowd going, and it was exactly what you needed out of a title match at WrestleMania, you know, especially when we're kind of seeing some of the cards flipped where, you know, most years, you know, 5-10 years ago, this would have been the end of the night.
Right.
And they came out and just straight tore it down at the start.
Oh, 100%. 100%. Like I said, saw a triple Future Shock DDT, Alabama slams. Bobby had several huge like choke slam maneuvers. But what we saw with the ending was McIntyre going for a massive claymore on Lashley, but of course, MVP right there in Bobby Lashley's corner. He causes the distraction by shouting. Lashley then takes control of the match. He gets Drew in the Hurt Lock. There's a bit of fighting where you think Drew might make it out, but Bobby cinches it in, and eventually, Drew doesn't tap out. He passes out.
Yeah, MVP was definitely the real MVP of the night there, you know?
I see what you did there. See what you did there.
It was a little bit surprising that Bobby won this match with the build. I really expected Drew to win. I know that Bobby's only had the belt for a little period of time, but, you know, typically you pick up on patterns in wrestling, and the way they had Drew going through this gauntlet over the last number of weeks on Raw and just tearing through anybody that they could throw at him and all the people Lashley was trying to, you know, get to take him out and all of that as they were coming through the story build, typically that does turn out to be a face win.
Sure.
And so I just kind of expected that they were really just building that back, give Drew that win in front of the crowd since he got kind of robbed of that last year. But they stuck with Bobby and,
yeah,
you know, surprising, but totally deserved.
Yeah.
I mean, he's got a great gimmick. He's on a run.
I don't think he's lost since 2020. Like, I don't think he's lost at all in 2021.
Yeah, it's been a while.
So it's, you know, he's got four straight months of winning. But you thought Drew, our social media followers, they also thought Drew was going to win it. We saw a 60-40 Drew McIntyre leaning split on our social media polls. But in the end, it was the almighty Bobby Lashley retaining his WWE Championship. We'll see what they do moving forward. You know, are we going to see a rematch of some kind at SummerSlam? Are they both going to move on to other programs? It really is tough to say. I know that we just saw opening Raw a little earlier. Matt Riddle came out and wrestled Bobby Lashley and kind of looked like he got torn to pieces. So they could keep Bobby on a tear.
Torn to pieces, but it was a long match. So
yeah,
I mean, he definitely got some shots in on Bobby, but it's definitely a big question where we're going to go next. I would really, really like to see somebody from the New Day without getting into it too much, because I know we've got some matches on the card here a little bit later, but if I had my choice here, I think that I would like to see Big E, you know, come over and challenge him moving forward into SummerSlam, but we'll have to see.
You have to see how that maybe could be. I don't know if I have a set pick, because I think Bobby Lashley is just going to continue to win.
Likely.
And so it's tough for me to pick a loser in a feud with him, but
I'll wrap with this and say they need to establish a new Hurt Business. Since they pushed away from Cedric and Sheldon and kind of split that so quickly, the Hurt Business is such a good gimmick, and it's getting so much love from the fans.
Yeah.
And I think that with this win, they really need to go and find two more people, you know, and bring them in, the Street Profits or something, you know, and like really legitimize them as a stable for a while around him if he's going to have the belt for, you know, the next 3 or 6 months.
Yeah. Or they should have, I mean, I don't want to go down this rabbit hole, but they should have never broken him up in the first place.
No, that's kind of what I'm getting at in the first place. But yeah. If it's not going to be Sheldon and Cedric, go find two more and make them pop for a while.
And make them pop. But we will move on here. The next matchup was the Tag Team Turmoil match, essentially a gauntlet-style match that saw several women's tag teams come in, wrestle for a chance to go for the titles on night two against Nia Jax and Shayna Baszler. So we saw teams of Natalya and Tamina go up against Naomi and Lana, Mandy Rose and Dana Brooke, and the Riot Squad, which of course is Ruby Riott and Liv Morgan. So awesome opening intro of Naomi and Lana. They got that pop. They felt the glow. But all in all, I mean, this match only went 15 minutes and there were five teams in it. The crowd was really pushing them through, but ultimately the match just didn't quite execute in the way that some of these wrestlers are capable of executing. At the end of the day, Natalya and Tamina actually got the win. That shocked me a lot. Oh, I guess I did forget Carmella and Billie Kay were right. in there as yep. well. And in the end, Natalya and Tamina, they got the win. They moved on to night two.
Yeah, this match was full of mistakes.
Yeah.
So it was a little sloppy. So that was mistake number one. Mistake number two was that Lana and Naomi were eliminated within 5 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
That was absolutely ridiculous to me after Lana has been putting in the work and has taken like 49,000 table bombs
yeah.
from Nia Jax. Like, totally a missed opportunity for a great redemption story there and have them, you know, overcome the giants in Naomi and Shayna, you know, the next night. That was a huge mistake. And the third was Dana Brooks and Mandy Rose's tribute to Brawl and Panty Match ring attire.
Oh,
I don't know what the hell they put them in, but they looked terrible. It looked like crappy lingerie. And legit, I'm going to say it, Dana Brooks' nipple came out on TV. I don't know if you caught that.
Yeah.
But they tried, that happened, and then they tried to change camera angles, but they went to one facing Mandy Rose, and she literally goes, Dana, your nipple.
I did not catch that specifically.
Like, she saw it, was like, yo.
Oh.
But it was, the whole thing was just like, what is going on? And it totally lost me as soon as Lana and Naomi were eliminated. I did not care after that.
Oh, that was my pick. Naomi and Lana, that was my pick. It was also our social media. It was their pick. We had 56% of the votes were going for Naomi and Lana. They were the first team out. They were the first team in the ring, and they were the first team knocked out of this gauntlet match. And it just demoralized me.
Yeah.
I was sitting on the couch. That happened, and Taylor turned, and she was like, well, who do you want to win? I'm like, honestly, I don't care now.
Yeah.
Like, I guess the Riot Squad. Like that, because that's how you want to pick your winner by default. You know, I like Mandy Rose and Dana Brooke. I saw they laughed at themselves a little bit and said that their new tag team name is going to be called Nip Slip.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, you know, obviously the wardrobe malfunction in the ring, and then Mandy Rose fell on the entrance ramp on the way to the ring.
Right.
But yeah, all in all, just it really is like it was a semi decent tag match for a while, and then it just bottomed out.
Yeah.
And it just really was unfortunate. I don't want to sit here and drive it into the ground. It just, every performer in that ring can do better. And I don't know, you know, sometimes Mania gets them time, who knows, weather, who knows, could be scripting in the back. It fell flat.
Oh, we don't have to make excuses for them. They're professionals. But yeah, those gauntlet matches are historically tough to pull off cleanly. And the real thing was that they killed two matches with the outcome.
Yeah.
Like, because as soon as Tamina and Natalya won this match, you knew they were going to lose the next night.
Yeah.
There was no chance in my mind that they were going to take the belts off of Nia Jax and Shayna the next night. So then it made that match insignificant to me.
Yeah.
And I hate to say that, but it just still seems to be the default operating method of the women's tag team division in WWE.
It's true. So we beat that one into the ground enough. Let's move on to the next match, which was, of course, Seth Rollins versus Cesaro. I'm not going to lie, Chris. I loved all. It was like 12, 13 minutes, this match. I loved every second of it. These are just two amazing professional wrestlers. You know, say what you will about Cesaro's gimmick and his inability to speak on a microphone, whatever. That dude in the ring, nobody is better. And Seth Rollins is right there with him in the ring. This was just a masterclass. They were putting on insane moves. A lot of, you know, wrestling tennis.
Right, right.
And as we'll say, a lot of back and forth, but we saw massive uppercuts. We saw a corkscrew splash, neutralizer reversal into a pedigree. Cesaro doing the giant swing like two or three times. Ultimately, it ended with Cesaro going for a massive 20-plus giant swing, then getting the win. The match was a little shorter, but I think it was to give Cesaro that moment after the bell. So he was in the ring getting the appreciation of the fans.
Oh, for sure. Another big move that I thought was awesome was Seth Rollins hit Cesaro with a superplex and went straight into a Falcon Arrow and then into the pin combo.
Yeah.
I thought that was pretty solid the way they rolled through that. But really, I think that this was just done so well, and bravo to Seth Rollins, because, you know, Cesaro is not necessarily a guy that needs to be put over, but he also is.
Yeah.
And I felt like while Seth definitely got some offense in at times, like he pretty much he just put Cesaro over.
Yeah.
I mean, Cesaro pretty much just whooped his ass, you know, start to finish. And it was really great to see because it's so deserving. And he also is another guy I actually think could go and challenge Bobby Lashley.
Okay.
You know, maybe he doesn't quite take the belt, even though he could do a Daniel Bryan and just become this, like, fan favorite monstrosity as a face.
Yeah.
But, you know, at least let him go and maybe main event SummerSlam opposite Bobby Lashley and give him kind of that next nod in the title picture or something like that.
I would be all right with Cesaro going after the IC belt or the U.S. title belt and getting a win. I'm not sure if he's ever held a singles belt. He's held a tag team belt before with a few different people, but I don't know if he's ever had a singles off the top of my head. But yeah, absolutely. If you can, go check out this match. It was great. Putting out there the social media, 63% of our followers said they were all in on Cesaro. So I think everyone is all in on Cesaro. The man is amazing. Swiss Superman. Just keep it rolling, big guy. Keep it rolling. As we're going to keep it rolling into the next match, which is the Raw Tag Team Championship. We did get a brief WrestleMania SmackDown recap before that, where we saw Jey Uso win the Andre the Giant Battle Royale. We also saw Bobby Roode and Ziggler, the Dirty Dogs, retain their Tag Team Championships. So we did get that before we got to the Raw Tag Team Championship. But for the Raw Tag Team Championship, it was the New Day current champions going up against AJ Styles and the Giant Omos. This one was all about one thing, and it was keeping AJ on the side of the ring and keeping Omos out of the ring until that moment.
Right.
And then it was a lot of great tag team wrestling by New Day. Like, I think Woods actually yelled at one point, "We're cutting the ring in half."
Well, he did, and that's actually like one of my main notes from this match. You always kind of knew where this match was going, but I just was laughing so hard at the New Day because they were really putting on a clinic for tag team wrestling. And in that moment you mentioned, Woods had AJ in a headlock, and he literally like breaks the fourth wall and he's screaming. He's like, "You're not a tag team wrestler, AJ. This is how you effectively cut a ring a hat." And he's like giving him lessons in the middle of the match, and it's all on camera. And it's just that, you know, charisma and comedy that the New Day have, and they do so well. But
yeah,
it was just funny. Like that little moment that would be super easy to miss. And then shortly after, we saw the big man come in.
Oh, yeah. And then once Omos came in, that's all it was. He just destroyed everybody. Dude is a hoss. He's like well over 7 feet tall.
He's bigger than Shaq.
Yeah, bigger than Shaq. They took a picture backstage, and he was standing next to Bobby Lashley, and he was making Bobby Lashley look like a peanut.
Yeah.
Like, this dude is huge. We saw a couple big moves that were pretty unique, where we saw a phenomenal forearm off Omos's shoulders.
Right.
Thought that was pretty cool. Eventually, Omos does hit the big lift two-handed slam on Kofi, and he does the step on his chest pin. He doesn't even go down for the pin. He just steps on the chest. Got the win. New tag team champions. Very excited to see where this goes because Omos is a beast, but also very excited for AJ Styles because he is now officially a Grand Slam champion.
Yeah, well-deserved. The real question will be what happens with Omos, and I imagine at some point we're on a collision course to where AJ is going to fight Omos and really put him over.
Yeah, oh yeah, absolutely. You got to imagine those two guys are working behind the scenes to improve his in-ring skill. He's definitely athletic. You know, he's done some little things here and there that have shown how athletic he can be with kicks and certain moves and things like that. So it'll be an interesting career to watch from this point on. They've shot him to the moon real quick, completely bypassed, you know, NXT and all that jazz. So we'll see what is in store for the Giant Omos. But from one monster to the next matchup was Shane McMahon against Braun Strowman in a steel cage. It was on Shane's back. It was indeed the Brains versus Braun matchup. It was kind of the whole story going into this. Shane thought Braun was stupid, and Braun just wanted to kill Shane. Our social media, they felt the same. Braun had 84% of the votes. I think Shane McMahon had one lone vote in all of our social media, thinking he was going to win. This was another match. It was totally telegraphed. You knew exactly how it was going to go down. It didn't take away from the big spots, because it's a Shane McMahon WrestleMania match, and you're going to get a big crash. You're going to get a big dive.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they went big spots from the get-go. As soon as Braun comes out and he had Elias and Jackson start attacking him, and then Shane just pummels him with chairs to start the match. You know, I mean, it was intense from moment one. And then, as you said, you're always going to get some big dives. So that huge, you know, front flip throw that Braun did on Shane from the top of the cage was a serious bump. And even, once again, Shane McMahon still having the athletic ability to hit coast to coast and jump.
Yeah.
I mean, you're talking about a 18, if the ring is 20 by 20 and he's outstretching, I mean, you're talking a 18-foot flat-footed jump off of a ring rope, which is not really the most stable of bases. Maybe you get a little spring there to help, but I mean, at what, 53 or what, however old he is at this moment, it never ceases to amaze me. It's like worth the price of admission right there to watch him do that move.
It is always impressive. But the highlight of the match for me was actually Braun. It seemed gimmicky, maybe a little stupid, but it was when Shane was crawling up and over the top of the cage, and he was on the outside.
Yes.
And Braun hops up on the turnbuckle, grabs Shane's wrist through the cage, holds him there, and then with his other hand rips the side of the cage off and pulls Shane back into the steel cage. It was pretty impressive.
Right.
So ultimately, this one did come down after throwing him off the top of the cage. He comes down, hits him with the running power slam, gets the win. We're not, like I said, not going to stick around on this one. This one obviously went the way it needed to go.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, Shane's kind of like the reverse Undertaker at WrestleMania, where he's going to wrestle every year, but he's going to lose. And it's not the worst thing in the world, because he still performs at such a high level. But, you know, it does always take a little something away when you know the outcome.
It does. Yeah, I just wish, you know, we need to move on. But I wish they would do a little more with Braun.
Yeah, agreed.
You've got a diamond there, guys. You've got a diamond. Everything you've given him, he's crushed. And he might not be everybody's cup of tea, but you can't deny he has taken every gimmick, every match, everything, and ran with it and tried his hardest. And he doesn't seem to get rewarded ever. But it does bring us to our celebrity matchup. It is Bad Bunny and Damian Priest taking on The Miz and John Morrison. I gotta say, Chris, it was the entrance of night one for me, with Miz and Morrison coming out, lip-syncing Hey Hey Hop Hop, with probably 20 to 30 bunnies in the ring.
Yeah,
they, like,
it was so ridiculous.
Legitimate Easter bunnies. They put those poor NXT trainees in bunny suits, hopped them out to the ring, and these two fools came out and did this entrance, and I was rolling. It was so ridiculous. It was so amazing.
Yeah, everything about them is absolutely ridiculous, but it just works. I don't know. There's just something about them is.
Yeah, something about The Miz. And I'm sure there's people out there that are like, do you think John Morrison's really happy with returning to WWE and this is where his career is taking him? And I think he looks at his bank account and he's like, yeah, I'm cool with this.
I don't know. If you watch Miz and Mrs., which I'll admit I do with the wife, you know, Morrison's on there sometimes because they are super good buddies.
Yeah.
They're traveling together and he looks happy as can be. So, you know, maybe that's a face for the camera, but seems like he's just having fun hanging out with his buddy.
It's true. And they did just sign his wife to an NXT deal.
Ah, there you go.
So probably going to get that. But one-upping their entrance was Bad Bunny with a massive entrance of his own, coming in on an 18-wheeler truck, tons of pyro, tons of hype. And Bad Bunny had a decent amount of pressure on him going into this match, because celebrity matchups are always a staple at WrestleMania. WWE has done them over time. We've seen Stephen Amell, Pete Rose, William Shatner, all these guys have gotten in the ring before. Not all of them have wrestled, of course.
Right.
But they've all done spots. But Bad Bunny got in this ring for a tag team matchup. And a lot of hype, a lot of pressure, and dude delivered.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it wasn't just a spot.
Yeah.
He wrestled this match. I mean, he wrestled the majority of this match. And I thought that that was a really cool twist because, you know, most celebrity matches have a similar formula. You're going to have a tag partner who is the professional wrestler. He's going to spend 90% of the time in the ring fighting the enemies. And then you're going to get a hot tag to the celebrity who's going to do like one to three things and get the pin.
Yep.
And for them to start it out where Miz is like, nope, no, 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 Damian Priest, you're not going to Archer my infamy today. You know, he's like, I want Bad Bunny. And they went with it. I mean, this was a legit wrestling match. I was super surprised just because you never know, even if they're training.
Yeah.
And everybody was saying that he had been down at the Performance Center training. You just never know because wrestling is so much more difficult than anybody likes to think. And we've heard that from a lot of other celebrities, you know, even football player Lawrence Taylor wrestled in a WrestleMania in the 80s and came out and said it was harder than playing professional football.
Oh, yeah.
And so to watch him do what he did was amazing. And I have to say, too, for what anybody wants to say about The Miz, bravo to The Miz and Morrison, but really The Miz.
Yeah.
For putting him over.
Oh, yeah. They made him look like $1 million.
Yep.
Certainly Bad Bunny played his part and did the things that he needed to do. Noted he did a massive spinning Hurricane Rana. He actually had, you know, the top rope to the outside jump. He did the insane Canadian Destroyer on the outside of the ring, which we may double back to real quick. Spinning DDT. He put in the work, but The Miz and Morrison sold like nobody's business.
Right.
And they made him look amazing.
Yeah, and it pulled off. He had some lucha moves in there. He took a pounding, too.
Yeah.
I mean, there was a few shots that Miz gave back to him that I was like, oh, man, that, you know, not too many of the celebrities get clocked like that. And so he took some lumps. He took some bumps. The dual Falcon arrows that they did into the pinning combination was perfectly synchronized and was an awesome set of moves.
Yeah.
And I think that's really what it came down to was that he seemed to have the full repertoire.
Mm-hmm.
He was doing waist locks and hand-to-hand combat, and he hit the ropes a couple times, the dives, the suplexes. I mean, he looked like a professional wrestler versus most guys that come in that, you know, hey, I'm going to teach you how to do one or two moves, you know. And I know he's older, but it makes me think of, like, Snoop Dogg on AEW a couple weeks ago when yeah. he comes out, and he, like, couldn't even do the splash off the top rope. He's lanky. He's in his 50s. I'll give him a pass.
Oh,
but you
yeah.
know what I mean? Like, that kind of sums up what most celebrity matches are, whereas this was just like, you could give this guy a contract.
Oof. I don't know if you could give this guy a contract.
Look, okay.
I mean, well,
you know what I mean.
Maybe,
you
okay, know. All right. Actually, that is fair. You might be able to give him a training contract, you know, and leave him develop a little bit. You know, I don't think that's going to happen given the promo that we saw on night two because he's got a tour coming.
Yeah.
But no, he looked great, and as a lifelong WWE fan, it's what he wanted to do, and he put in the time. He spent months. I heard that he moved. He relocated himself to Orlando and spent day in, day out training at the Performance Center and put in the work, learned the craft, and put on a show. And, like, honestly, it is possibly the best celebrity match ever.
Oh, I'll flat out say it. I mean, I tweeted about it. I thought it was easily the best celebrity match in a WrestleMania.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The very few come to Mr. T, just because of the epicness of the Mr. T stuff, maybe.
Sure. Okay.
You know, but as far as technical skill, yeah, I would say Bad Bunny. There's not too many others.
It's up there. I mean, it was good. He set a new bar. We could leave it at that, is that he set a new bar for celebrities that want to come and step in the ring for an actual match with WWE superstars.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. But in the end, like, because the end was crazy as well, Bad Bunny and Damian Priest actually hit an elevated crossbody. It was like a doomsday device.
It was great.
With a crossbody on the top instead of just a clothesline, you know, flip over on The Miz. And got the 1-2-3 and the big win. They stand tall. Bad Bunny looked great. Damian Priest looked great.
Yeah, yeah, he didn't have to do as much, but he looked good. It was a big spot for him being a new guy to the main roster. Really interested to see what they're going to do with him moving forward, because he's kind of been riding the Bad Bunny train, which really isn't necessarily a bad thing for a young guy like that. But okay, Bad Bunny's going to go on tour. He's going to leave. What's going to come next? Like maybe an actual Miz Damian Priest feud or something like that?
Oh, you know,
keep him rolling without a title in the picture. We'll have to see.
Yeah, just don't let him fall flat. You know, let him take this momentum into something else, into SummerSlam, into the summer months.
Right.
But this does bring us to the main event of night one, SmackDown Women's Championship. Sasha Banks, the current champion, taking on Royal Rumble winner Bianca Belair. Chris, this one was just amazing. Like, it was just everything laid out on the line. There was just a fantastic moment right at the beginning of the match. Cole had a fantastic call. You know, we kind of hate on Michael Cole a little bit, but right at the beginning of the match, he had a perfect 11-second call that you could probably find on Twitter. First time in WrestleMania main event history, two black women wrestlers fighting for a title. And I literally got goosebumps. It was, you could feel the emotion. And as soon as the bell rang, it just kind of felt like this, just something that I needed to watch with all intent, with no distractions. And I put my phone down. I put the laptop down, no notes. I just watched this match. And I wrote down one word when it was all over, and it was delivered.
Oh, absolutely. It delivered from the moment Bianca started down the ramp to the moment that the match ended. What I think is really missed here is the effectiveness and the energy that came from doing a two-night event. And so we've seen in the past with some of like the big-time historic matches that they've started to do with the women at WrestleMania, like thinking back on Charlotte and Ronda and Becky.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was during a 7-hour event that was all happening on one night. And, you know, that match happened at like midnight when everybody in the crowd was just exhausted and gone.
Yeah.
And so my point was that this was the total opposite. You're talking about that energy and everything. The crowd was so hyped, and it was like all the energy was there. And it was almost just like it was maybe even more than when Bobby and Drew came out.
Yeah.
And it all just fed into making the atmosphere what you want and what is so good with live wrestling. And then you add in that historical moment and, you know, the nature. You could see on their faces the sheer emotions just coming out of them. You know, Bianca was just struggling not to just burst into tears right there. And I remember like yelling at the screen, like, hold it together. Like, don't break just yet. You know? Like,
yeah. Oh yeah.
But it was also so special, and you could see that Sasha recognized it, because I think the bell rang and maybe they were supposed to start right off the bat, but like Sasha kind of like looked around and kind of gave a moment. It was almost a letter, like, let Bianca collect herself.
Yeah.
And then just from there on, they delivered, like you said. Every moment of this match was fantastic.
Yeah. I mean, it was everything you want in a main event at WrestleMania. No qualms about it. Nothing you can say. No complaints. It was just awesome. And it, honestly, the story got a little wonky on the way to WrestleMania. You know, they started to add in the tag belt situation and this and that.
Right.
I don't think it needed that, but it happened. But once that bell rang, that didn't matter. It was all about Banks and Belair, one-on-one, this moment. And it was just so good. And like you said, when the bell rang, they both kind of paused for a moment. And the crowd gave it to him. Like, everyone was recognizing what was happening and about to happen. And then they just threw down.
Right. Well, and I thought it was a bold match to execute on. I mean, for Bianca, we've seen her now for long enough, going back to NXT, that there is no doubt that she's amazingly athletic. She is way stronger than she looks. She's kind of like Cesaro, yeah, like the pound-for-pound strongest person there. And you look at how this match was to go through things like, you know, that dive that Sasha did where Bianca catches her and rolls right through it, and then military presses her, and then walks 10 feet over to the steel steps, and then walks up the steel steps while still military pressing her. I mean, Sasha, Bianca probably power cleans a Sasha Banks, you know, every day of the week 20 times.
Right.
But you think about something like that, right? Like when she was walking up this, like she could have dropped her. She could have struggled to get her up. You know, even if those arms would have come down a little bit, like she was straining to hold her up, it would have kind of hurt the gimmick and
the moment,
and the whole,
yeah,
the moment. And yet she just nailed it. And I mean, it looked like she wasn't straining at all, but like, I thought that it was awesome that they were willing to take some of those risks to set her up in the way she needs to be, you know, moving forward, when it kind of could have all come apart. I mean, if some of those moments wouldn't have worked out as well as they did, I think some of the sentiment coming out of that match would have been toned down a little bit. Whereas, you know, everything I saw on social media was just like, oh my God.
Yeah.
This, so good, bravo, the whole nine yards.
Yeah, well, and we talked about it a little earlier with some of the matches where you get caught up in the emotion of wrestling at WrestleMania, having been crowdless for a year. It would be very easy to let that kind of situation get the better of you, and neither one of them did.
Sasha Banks is the boss. You know, she definitely had the composure for a moment like that, but I was so impressed, and I have to say it, I had a little bit of vindication because, you know, over a year ago when we really started getting introduced, I jumped on the Bianca Belair train right away, and I'm gonna take credit for some of that because, you know, she just walked the walk. I mean, everything that you see in her from the moment that you watch her wrestle is real and is legit and authentic, and she can do it. And it was so cool to see her so quickly ascend to something that she very much deserves. She's going to have to come out of it, you know, and hold it moving forward, but very much deserved.
Oh, very much, very much. And very much deserved on both ends. Like I said, Sasha Banks being in that moment as well as, you know, the first time two African-American wrestlers headlined a WrestleMania, let alone women.
Right.
Like, that's crazy. And so you need both of them right there. But it will be very interesting to see what happens to Belair coming out of this next. If this match is any indication with what she performed, I said, I don't think we've necessarily dropped all of the moves that she's done in that match other than the big, you know, power clean lift. But she had a 450 splash on Banks.
Yeah.
Like, that was wild. She pulled that out of her repertoire. Like, we saw plenty of bank statements.
Dude, she literally hit a standing shooting star press at the end of a 3 or 4 move high energy combo with suplexes and everything. That was the end of the sequence. And you think about the athleticism and the energy it takes just to do that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Normal when you're not 20 minutes into a match. It's just like she has an endless tank, you know, all that runner athleticism she's got from her University of Tennessee days, you know, like she just has endless energy, it seems. But I think kind of the thing that sums it up the most, you were talking about the energy, the excitement. There was a split second moment as soon as the bell was rang and she won and the cameras started kind of hitting the crowds, where literally one of the dudes, I don't know if you saw this, the dude in the front row almost jumped over the barrier. Like, he was, like, you could tell it was just so excitement, like, throw the hands up, but his leg was, like, over the barrier. Like, it's just, it perfectly embodied, I think, what the entire WWE universe, how they all react, how we all react.
Everyone. Well, it's that babyface moment at WrestleMania.
Right.
And there's no better babyface right now that deserved that moment other than Bianca Belair. But we'll talk about the closing moments a little bit of the match so everyone can get a clear picture how it exactly ended. We saw Belair and Banks kind of getting in a tug of war with Belair's hair. She ultimately ripped it out of Sasha Banks's hands and then whipped her across the stomach in one of the most vicious, like, slaps I've ever heard. I imagine anyone's ever heard. I saw a few people joking on Twitter that it broke the sound barrier.
Yeah.
Like, it was so loud. You instantly saw the welt on Sasha Banks's rib cage. It was brutal. Then, of course, she performs the Kiss of Death on Banks and gets that 1-2-3 and that massive pop that you said. People jumping over the barricades, going absolutely ballistic.
Yeah, it was a great way to finish what was a really solid night one.
Absolutely. And unfortunately, that does bring us into night two. And it's tough because night one was so good that night two had so much it had to live up to. And a lot of, you know, you hear this all the time with WrestleMania. Someone goes out there and steals the show really early.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh man, everyone else has to try to top that. Can they? Probably not. And that's kind of what happened here with night two. Night one was just so good across the board on technical wrestling, on the right people winning, on those moments, that night two was in for a tall task. But they did attempt, and we saw some shining brights here. We saw some good matches. The opening match of night two was, of course, The Fiend Bray Wyatt going up against Randy Orton. And this was a very interesting match. I noted the match itself actually only lasted about 6 minutes, but the segment was almost 20.
Yeah, there was a lot of build for this match, and it really ended up being way more about everything else that happened and not so much about what happened in the ring. But, I mean, the entrance for The Fiend was epic. You know, seemingly walking out of hell through this, you know, chain link fiery tunnel and transforming from, you know, crispy bacon Fiend to, you know, kind of a new reborn version of The Fiend, you know, with a slightly different look and all of that. And then they come over to that giant Jack in the Box and Alexa Bliss with a sweet payoff from something that she set up on Raw a couple weeks ago with a promo, or maybe SmackDown, but a promo she did with this tiny Jack in the Box. So the whole thing was masterfully crafted from a storytelling perspective.
Yeah, I will say, at least with the Alexa Bliss stuff, storytelling, I'm not so certain I agree on that because of how this match ultimately ended. So The Fiend, he gets his healing powers on, very Wolverine-esque, and is renewed. He gets in there. He comes out on the Jack in the Box. So we saw Alexa Bliss with the little one. She has the giant one. Should say she starts turning it and the top pops. And of course it is The Fiend. The match gets underway. Pretty awesome. You know, The Fiend jumps off the top of this giant Jack in a Box. And then it's on. And it's a lot of classic Orton moves against a no-selling Fiend. And ultimately, the ending was just so bizarre. It was a lot of back and forth, and I think most of the match really was classic Orton versus Mandible Claws, and that's really all it was. It wasn't a technical showcase. It was the ending, basically, The Fiend had the upper hand, could have put Orton away, when all of a sudden, Bliss reappears on top of this Jack in the Box, and she's covered in just like black tar. She almost looks like a raven queen of some kind. And the tar is just kind of like bleeding all down her face. Just black, just goop running all over her. And it looks grotesque and nasty. And The Fiend is distracted by it. He's mesmerized by it. Orton hits an RKO out of nowhere and gets the 1-2-3. My problem with this whole thing is, how in the world is The Fiend, who got burned alive a couple weeks ago, losing this match?
I thought that was unexpected, but if you look at kind of the long-form storytelling, I guess we've got to see exactly what the confirmation's going to be. But my first thought was, okay, we're finally seeing Sister Abigail. And it seemed like a lot of folks online were thinking the same thing. And, I mean, if that is really what this transformation was about, and Alexa came out of that Jack in the Box reborn as Sister Abigail, then to me, I didn't even care what happened with the match, because if you think about what, 5, 7, 8, 9, I mean, how many years has it been that Bray Wyatt has kind of built the legend of Sister Abigail with the Wyatt family characters and everything? And so, I mean, I think that if that's where they went with it, then that's where I was like, this is epic storytelling, because, yeah, like, he would have been like, holy shit, there's my sister. You know what I mean? Like, or something like that. Like, it would have caught him off guard. He would have been focused. That's all he's cared about for like a decade, in a way.
I hear that. My problem is WrestleMania is not the place to kick off stories. It's a place to end stories.
I mean, it was an interesting move. I can't argue that. You know, it was an interesting move. I think I, like most people, thought for sure The Fiend was going to win this match. But I just thought it was really great imagery. I kind of got caught up in all of that. And I really love what Alexa has done. You know, she's barely wrestling, but she's insanely relevant right now with this dark character. And so maybe that was really more of what it was for me, was like just kind of getting caught up in all of that. But it worked for me. I liked it.
Yeah, you along with our social media, you know, 70% said Bray Wyatt was going to get the win. Everyone thought he was going to make this comeback, whether it was the burnt version or a healed version. He was going to get the win over Randy Orton. He was going to get the comeuppance and you know, get what he deserved. But it just didn't go that way. And I think my biggest problem is I just don't like the idea of WrestleMania continuing a story and not giving me a payoff for a story. It's my biggest issue with the whole thing. But we'll see where it goes. Maybe in a year from now, it'll be an even longer story. I can't say.
They're setting up WrestleMania 38, bro.
Right, yeah. If I had any sort of faith in WWE, I would believe that, but I don't. So let's move on to the Women's Tag Team Championship. We're skipping over the Bayley, Titus, Hogan, Eric Bischoff backstage segment. I don't care. And we're going to the Women's Tag Team Championship, which, of course, is Nia Jax and Shayna Baszler, the current champions, taking on Night One Tag Team Turmoil, you know, winners in Natalya and Tamina. We kind of addressed this one earlier. As soon as Natalya and Tamina won on Night One, the script was written for Night Two.
Yeah.
And this one went way too long for me. It was a 15-minute match, and it wasn't there. It wasn't fluid.
Mm-mm.
Like, no point. It just seemed clunky. Somehow Nia Jax and Shayna Baszler still are not a cohesive tag team, and it doesn't make any sense to me. None of this, it just wasn't clean.
It's true. It wasn't, and honestly, it was kind of a smoke break match for me. At least I thought it was going to be, and then I came back, and they hadn't started yet, so I caught it all. There was a couple of cool moves here. I'll give some credit where credit's due. I thought that the slingshot into the super kick by Natalya on Shayna was a cool move. And then I do have to give a little bit of credit for Nia Jax, that double crossbody dive from the top rope, kind of shades of like a Bam Bam Bigelow, a big, big heavyweight getting up there and doing a dive was kind of cool. But other than that, it was a pedestrian match. I've said it before. We've said it before. This should have been on a SmackDown match, you know, or something along those lines. And knowing what the outcome was going to be just kind of took all the oomph out of it.
The fact is, it was a SmackDown match two nights before this.
Well, that's true, too. Yeah.
Yeah, it literally was. These two teams fought on Friday SmackDown before this Sunday WrestleMania match. And it had the same outcome.
Yeah.
And which, of course, well, it didn't have the exact same outcome, I guess. You know, in the not how it happened, but in the end, what went down? Natalya is going for the sharpshooter on Nia Jax, who isn't the legal partner because of a blind tag that Baszler put on earlier. She gets her in the sharpshooter, and then of course Shayna Baszler runs in, puts on the Kerfuta clutch, and you know, gets the tap and gets the win. Champions remain champions. WWE, you need to spend more time on your Women's Tag Team Championship, and that's the last I'm going to say about it. Next up, it is Kevin Owens against Sami Zayn, who had Logan Paul in his corner. This is two guys that I could watch fight forever. You know, lifelong friends, trust each other with everything, and they just went out there and kicked the living hell out of each other for about 12 minutes. You know, our social media following was all in on KO to 87%. You know, we were all behind Kevin Owens. And, I think I could watch these two wrestle forever.
Typically, yes, but honestly, I thought this match didn't deliver.
Really?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you got to think. We've seen KO versus Sammy multiple times, and this match wasn't even close to what we'd gotten before. I mean, some of those drag-out battles they had in NXT and when they first came to the main roster were just so epic that, A, it's just going to be hard to ever live up to that, you know, again, because they set their own bar so high. So while it wasn't a bad match, per se, there was some cool moves that happened here. Like, I thought Sammy hit this really good, like, five-move suplex sequence where it was, like, Exploder, Blue Thunder Bomb, Snapdragon, Exploder, Brain Buster, all, like, boom, boom, boom. That was pretty sweet. So it had some moments, but I just, as much as I really expected this to be knockdown, drag out, blow my mind amazing, because that's the history they have, I thought that maybe it was bottom of the list for KO versus Sammy matches that we've seen.
I mean, it was a little tough, you know, with the beginning. The momentum wasn't there at the beginning, but I thought once they found their footing, it was a solid KO Sammy match. I guess I'd have to agree with you. It's not going to be the best KO Sammy match I've ever seen. And especially coming off that tag team where, like, I've seen that match before. I don't want to see it again. Right. Going into this one, I'm like, I've seen it a million times and I'll watch it a million times. I guess you could call me a bit of a hypocrite there, but I thought once these two got going, you know, it really delivered. And I'm always going to pop for a Michinoku driver. It's always going to get me.
Oh, sure.
And I thought the frog splash looked good. Like you said, the exploders into the corner looked good. The brain buster on the apron looked awesome. Second rope fisherman suplex looked good. Like, these two just had some stiff shots, and it sold it for me.
Oh, no, they executed it just fine, but it just was a whole lot of stuff that we've seen. I thought that it was kind of sad that the crowd at the beginning was more interested in Logan Paul than they were the match. I thought Logan Paul was fucking stupid. I'll say that. That was a stupid addition to this whole thing, and it kind of showed that they really didn't have a whole lot between them going into it, that they had to bring him in just to kind of give some attention to the match.
Yeah.
And then he ultimately did nothing. And, well, until the end, which I'm sure we'll mention here in a minute. But to me, it all kind of got summed up in the finish, because the finish was a very pedestrian, kind of boring stunner in a pin.
Yeah.
Like, there was nothing exciting about
it. There wasn't much. They traded back and forth reversals a little bit with a Huluva kick reversal and then a super kick reversal. Eventually, KO, you know, calls out Sammy, hits the stunner, and does get the pin. So I agree with you there. Like, there wasn't anything too special about that. But once again, I mean, yeah, it really, it's a situation where no matter what you tell me, I'm going to be like, it's KO and Sammy, and I like it. So
the best thing of the whole night, though, was Logan Paul getting whiplash. He has to have whiplash.
Yeah.
I don't know if you saw that, but, like, at the end of the match, he comes up and KO stuns him.
Yeah.
And he didn't even hit his knees. Like, he literally, like, stunned him, and he did a front flip, like, whiplash, man, straight over his shoulder. It was one of the worst bumps I've ever seen.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It just, I was hoping for some more interference or something really, like, involvement from Logan Paul. And he just sat there in the chair. There was just nothing exciting about it to me.
No. Well, and once again, I'm gonna put it on WWE Creative, because I think this match got thrown together within the past 2 weeks.
Yeah, it was more recent.
Post Fastlane, which means this whole story got thrown together in the past 3 weeks, and that's not how you want to go into Mania. But let's not beat it into the ground. We've got bigger, better matchups to talk about. The next one was, of course, the United States Championship. Riddle, the champion, taking on Sheamus. This one, you know, a lot of back and forths. It's really all about the ending here.
Yeah.
And that ending was just crazy. You know, we saw a brief stumble when Sheamus had Riddle up on his shoulders. He was going for the top rope white noise. Knees kind of buckled a little bit, and then it got a little hairy there for a second. It looked like they kind of lost their footing, wasn't quite sure how they were going to bounce back into the match. And then ultimately, the finish, Riddle goes for a second rope kind of backflip, almost as if he was going for a lion tamer. And Sheamus, in the middle of that backflip, just hit him with a bro kick and kicked him straight in the teeth.
Yeah, that was pretty wild. Like, I really liked the move combo of the springboard moonsault into a big kick, you know, from that angle. I thought that was something I really hadn't seen before. But man, it caught him in the teeth. And the front half of this match I thought was pretty clean. The back half was a little shaky. You mentioned the near fall that could have been worse when Sheamus had him up on the ropes, but Riddle also kind of pulled an old man Goldberg.
Oh yeah.
And went for a jackhammer and didn't lift him and, you know, had to come down and give it that second attempt. So I don't know if that was on Sheamus, like his legs were really just kind of gassed and he couldn't give himself that push, or if it was on Riddle, but you know, it kind of put a blemish or a few blemishes on what was otherwise a better match than I expected it to be.
Yeah, fair enough. I'll say this one in the end, Sheamus got the pin and he's now the United States Championship. We'll see where both of these guys go. I'd like to see Sheamus go somewhere and challenge somebody different. Wouldn't mind seeing Cesaro come in and challenge for this. I don't know if Raw SmackDown rosters are aligning the way I want them to in my head right now.
Sure.
We did, as we mentioned earlier, we watched Riddle kind of get tossed around by Bobby Lashley. So very interesting to see where they take Matt Riddle.
I just hope, yeah, well that, but I also hope that his face is okay, because it looked brutal. Like, he was bleeding everywhere. It was almost like a Cesaro or Asuka moment. Like, you expected him to lose some teeth. And so when I saw him come out here on Raw, he must be okay. But man, that looked pretty bad last night.
It did. It looked a little rough. But we're going to keep on cruising here. The next one is the Intercontinental Championship. It is Big E, the champion, taking on Apollo Crews in a Nigerian drum fight. Essentially, this is a no DQ, pinfall or submission only. There were tons of weapons on the outside. There were drums on the outside, gongs on the outside. I had high expectations for this match, and I don't know why, but the match only went 7 minutes.
Yeah, it made no sense. They had better matches a couple weeks ago when the belt wasn't on the line, and I expected more out of this from every aspect. You know, the time, the Nigerian drum fight. Like, A, what is a Nigerian drum fight? Obviously, it was a new gimmick added to wrestling here, but they didn't even use the drums. And I thought that they missed a huge opportunity to have an epic entrance. I mean, like, I was expecting full Nick Cannon drumline to come out, you know, in front of Apollo Crews and just give him this sweet, sweet, you know, kind of cultural and everything entrance like they do sometimes.
Yeah,
I'm thinking Sting from a couple years ago when he had all of the like the Japanese big drums.
Yeah,
with the,
yeah.
You know, I don't know what the name is, so I apologize for that. But something like that, but just on a scale to fit into the drum fight theme. And none of it was there.
No, none of it was there. And they've got Apollo Crews rolling with this new gimmick, you know, where he's Nigerian royalty. He's finally recognizing his heritage. They had a lot of opportunity. And I think that is the name of the game with this match. There was so much opportunity that just didn't happen.
Right.
Like, and it wasn't even like it happened and didn't deliver. It like literally just never happened. The match came and went. I guess we saw some hits with, like, kendo sticks.
30% of the match was hits with kendo sticks.
Yeah.
Like, there was at least, like, 20 shots in the first 2 minutes of a 7-minute match.
Right, yeah. It was really strange. You know, Big E set up the table and eventually kind of gets that classic roles reverse, and he gets laid out on the table. Apollo went for a big frog splash but missed, goes through the table. Like, there were moments I'm like stumbling over my words because there's so much there. They clearly spent time before the match because that's when we got that Bad Bunny new tour preview.
Right.
And time after the match where we got the Hall of Fame package to set up and take down all of this stuff, but they never used it. It didn't make any sense. And then the ending in itself really wasn't all that great because Big E, as I said, Apollo went through the table, missed. Big E goes for the big ending. And then when he goes for the pin, we get a run-in by Dabba Kato. He's now known as Commander Aziz. I apologize if I'm butchering those names. He comes in for the interference. The commentators act like they don't know who he is, even though he's been on Raw before.
Oh, yeah. And in NXT and all sorts of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He choke slams Big E and then puts Apollo over him, and Apollo gets the pin and the win. And it was just so confusing.
Yeah, I didn't like it. It wasn't a good finish. It wasn't clean. His Commander Aziz's attire was horrible. I felt like we were going back to like 1980s wrestling, and I didn't like any of that. I had no problem with Big E dropping the belt because I kind of expected that to happen, but I didn't like how they did it here. Hopefully Apollo will get a decent run. He's a great wrestler. But as I said at the beginning, I do kind of hope that this will mean that Big E will go and challenge Lashley and give Big E an opportunity to fight for the championship, because I don't think he really ever has.
No, I don't think he's ever been in the title picture. He's held the IC belt before.
Right, and the US belt, and I think, you know, but he hasn't had WWE Championship or the Universal title.
No, not yet. But speaking of a top belt, our next match is the Raw Women's Championship. It is the champion Asuka taking on Rhea Ripley in her main roster debut, I guess, in some sort of way. She's come and done spots before,
right,
but has never been a full-fledged member of that roster. Versus now, she debuted on Raw a couple weeks ago, made her entrance, and then challenged Asuka. Asuka accepted, and this one was pretty good. I mean, it took a while to get going, I guess. Rhea Ripley really kind of showcased here. Asuka didn't get much offense, in my opinion.
No, I definitely think this was the lesser of the two women's title matches. It was a slower start. You know, I think they were trying to kind of build some of that presence for Rhea since she had been mostly gone for the last year with the, I think, COVID and travel and all that kind of stuff. You know, she hadn't been around too much. But I think where this one kind of was hindered compared to the Sasha and Bianca match was that Ripley was already set up as this powerhouse.
Yeah.
You know, she fought Charlotte. She had some domination in the Royal Rumbles and all of that. So, I mean, she was already kind of being built, and then she had to disappear for a while, right when she was kind of hot, you know, because of COVID.
True.
And so to me, this was almost just like a reestablishment of that. And Asuka definitely got some offense in. You know, there was definitely some back and forth. But for the most part, it was Rhea dominating this match. And it was kind of never in question whether or not she was going to walk out with it.
Oh, yeah. I totally agree. I think you, me, everybody, our social media was 80% on Ripley. Everyone knew where this was headed. The time is now, and she deserves it. She's had a great run in NXT. She's had great spots on the main roster. She's ready to become a star, and I really hope that she does become a star.
Right, and I think one thing, too, to call out here, and this might be a good point, though, is that one of the themes I think we saw through WrestleMania here was a lot of new blood, was a lot of new faces. Coming out of Mania, like on Raw right now, they're obviously back at the Thunderdome, so they're not in front of crowds, but they have to be looking at when they're going to start touring again,
yeah,
and doing live events. And to me, you know, Rhea Ripley, Bianca Belair, Bobby Lashley, you know, whoever it may be, you know, having a lot more newer names with the belts, I think, is the right move in a way, because it'll create that buzz. It will give fans kind of that extra reason to want to definitely go and buy tickets once they are traveling to their cities, you know? And so more so Asuka was a little flat, right? So yeah, it was kind of time to get the belt off her, but kind of just looking at it holistically from the business perspective, I thought a lot of the belt changes and stuff made sense from that standpoint. Cause it's like, okay, here's a bunch of folks that a lot of people haven't seen in person yet.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And so if touring comes back here in the next couple of months, you know, there should be a lot of hype.
Should be. And you make a good point. And I think I saw a stat somewhere that this is the first time in probably 8 years that there hasn't been a part-timer come back for a match in any capacity.
That's a good, I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, I don't know if it's exactly 8 years. I'm kind of like a little foggy on the exact statistic, but it's been a number of years, especially if you consider Cena as a part-timer, Undertaker right, as a part-timer, Brock Lesnar. It's been a
Triple H.
Well, I saw that crazy stat. I don't know if you saw that. It's like the first time since the 80s that the Undertaker or Triple H or Shawn Michaels haven't been on the card in some fashion.
Right, yeah.
That's wild. But ultimately, to wrap up the Raw Women's Championship here, We saw Asuka, you know, going to hit a running knee on Rhea. She reversed it into the Riptide, gets the pin. You know, I think my final word on this was, you're right, it was a great, great match, but nowhere near the epic that it could have been.
Right, yep.
So, speaking of epics that we really, really wanted to get, really wanted to see, it is time for Night 2 main event, the Universal Championship, all the build. Roman Reigns the champion, taking on Edge and Daniel Bryan. There was just so much energy to get Edge back in that ring for a match of this type. And he came out in the white trunks, looking awesome. You know, didn't look 44 at all, man. He looked great. I thought he looked great.
Yeah.
And Roman looked good. You kind of texted me, got me laughing a little bit. The Daniel Bryan coming out in like a Kmart sweatshirt.
Oh my God. Yeah. Like everybody at every Mania ever has like special edition, you know, crazy over the top gear with like freaking bling all over it and the whole nine yards. And then Daniel Bryan walks in with like a Hanes gray zip up. I don't even know if it was branded.
Yeah.
You know, it
was just a gray sweatshirt.
Probably vegan, you know?
Oh, my God. Well, I do know his trunks. He was wearing specialty trunks. They were green. You know, he's from Washington. So they had the green and they had the forest on the side. There was some stuff there. But as far as, like, entrance gear, yeah, he was just wearing his regular trunks, regular boots, and an all-gray sweatshirt. Why not?
It's so him, though. It's so authentic, so it's like a give him the pass, but it just cracks me up that, like, all we saw, all the pomp and circumstance, all the over-the-topness, and then Daniel Bryan just kind of, like, walks in. He's like, hey, guys, you know?
What's up?
You know? Like, he's, like, in his bathroom or something.
It's Mania.
But Edge's entrance, though, when that hit, and they had those huge fog machines on the stage, and like Strowman got it with the locomotive entrance, and then Edge got it for his, where they filled up like the entire lower bowl with smoke.
Yeah.
And then that huge pyro with the altar bridge going in the background, all the feels, all the goosebumps, all the emotions. This is what I was here for with Mania this year.
Oh yeah. 100%. I mean, it was all about Edge. And there were several moments in this match. I mean, to get it started, Jey Uso got involved right away because it is a triple threat, so there's no DQ.
Crazy intensity from the get-go with this match.
Oh, yeah, they were throwing stairs around and slamming people. It was wicked. And then essentially, you know, Jey Uso kind of gets eliminated a little bit, knocked down with some stairs. Roman gets hit with some stairs. He's knocked down. And then we get this perfect Daniel Bryan Edge one-on-one in the ring, and I was like, oh man, this is a dream moment.
Yeah, the match played out well, where you got a little bit of all three of them, you know, working against each other at the same time, but mostly they did well kind of breaking it apart and having these good one-on-one moments, and it delivered across the board. I had a note here that it pretty much was a car wreck.
Oh.
You know, once they got going and Jey started throwing super kicks around and the whole nine yards, I mean, they were just beating the absolute hell out of each other. And it had some of those kind of Attitude Era type vibes to it. Not quite to that level, but I did think that Edge probably brought a little bit more edginess, you know, to use a word that I didn't really want to use there. But you know what I mean? But like intensity, edginess, some of that old school feel. Like the DDT on the steps and some of those things that happened just felt a little bit more like some of the matches of yesteryear, but it all worked out pretty well.
Well, and you got to give it to Edge because he does it better than probably anybody else. The way he sells with his face.
Oh my God.
In those moments, like he makes you believe every moment is just so real.
And he looks so freaking crazy sometimes. Like some of those like moments towards the end, like they were just like zoomed in on his face, and it was just like his eye, like you could just think like his brain just broke.
Yeah,
you know.
it's true. And I there's an exact moment where I know that happened. But before we got to that, you said car wreck, and nothing was a bigger car wreck than the massive double spear shoulder to shoulder that happened in the middle of this match.
Yes.
So like I said, in classic triple threat kind of mantra here, they were rotating in and out. That's kind of how it works. You know, one guy gets knocked off to the side. You let the other two do their business. And every now and then you get some doubled up action. But there was this moment where Roman and Edge were both in the ring. They both bounce off the rope and they both go for a spear because they both obviously used the spear. And they just lock shoulder to shoulder. And obviously, you know, they know it's going to happen. But that doesn't stop it from looking just absolutely rough.
Oh, and full speed, it looked like it hurt.
Yeah, oh yeah.
You know, and they went full speed at each other and bounced off. So that was a solid moment. I thought that there was a really cool moment just to give the camera guys some props here. That it was kind of towards the beginning of the match, but Edge had Roman out in between the apron and the ring barrier, the crowd barrier, and he was like pounding his head off both sides, and the camera guys were on each side, and you could tell that the producer, whoever, he kept switching the cameras back and forth.
Oh, nice.
And so it was just creating this kind of crazy different views on every time he'd slam his head. So I did want to give a little bit of a shout out for that moment, because it was a really basic move, but I thought that the production crew kind of brought it to life or really gave it some more oomph.
Oh, yeah.
By doing what they did.
Well, and shout out to the production crew, because there were several moments in the night where they took angles that just made the wrestlers look like giants and just total superhero moments. And what I thought, my actual thought was, these are Thunderdome style angles, but now that they're in an arena with fans and an actual set behind them, it's making everything look so incredible.
That's a good point. Yeah, I'm sure they learned some things and had a chance to change some things up with the Thunderdome or use cameras maybe in different places. Maybe they put them up on like the lighting, you know, maybe some different spots. I didn't really think about it from that standpoint, but it's very possible.
Oh, yeah, I absolutely think so. And for me, it was a lot of like the side apron. They almost were below the third rope, looking up into a standing person in the ring.
True, yeah.
And I thought, oh, you know, with the Thunderdome, there's no crowd. They're not blocking anybody's view. And they may have found a way to replicate that in the arena, but without blocking anybody's view. And so
you're
still able to deliver that shot without ruining the fan experience. Because I think that's something that wrestling kind of harps on too much is WWE, at least. They don't want you to see the camera people.
Right.
And you got to be like, no, we know that they're there. You know, we see, how often do you see camera operators in live sports, in football?
Yeah.
You know, so
you can't avoid it entirely.
You can't avoid it. So when I see a camera op up on the side apron, like it doesn't bother me. It's like, yeah, that's how I'm viewing this. So, of course, there's camera people there.
Well, that was the classic WCW move.
Oh, yeah.
Was you would see, like, the camera guy literally on the apron on the other side of the ring all the time, and they didn't care.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, but that doesn't seem to be Vince's style. I will say, I thought that we were talking about moves before we kind of tangented, or I took us down that side string of the production crew, but talking about some of the moves from this match, I died when Edge and Daniel Bryan got Roman into the double submission, and quality improv by Edge to grab the piece of the chair that clearly wasn't supposed to be there and kind of use that inside Roman's teeth with the chicken wing submission. But when they started headbutting each other,
oh yeah,
like because like they were like, oh, I'm gonna win, and they looked at each other and then just started going like full goats and just like headbutting each other back and forth. I was just rolling. I thought that was freaking hilarious.
That moment got me because I saw somebody post like, yes, this makes sense. Two dudes with concussion issues headbutting each other. That's exactly what their wives want to see. And I couldn't get over that. I was dying. I'm like, that is too funny, because it's true. Both these dudes have had concussion neck problems.
Yeah.
And here they are in the ring headbutting one another.
Laying it all on the line, man.
But I agree. Yeah, that double submission where, you know, Edge took the broken piece of the chair, fish hooked it through Roman's mouth, and then DB comes in with the yes lock.
Yeah.
That was just really, really awesome. Well, we saw a ton of near falls here as well, because they kept that going throughout the entire match. Like, in a moment like this, in a match like this, you really don't know who's going to win.
Right.
Because I'll say, like, in our predictions, it was pretty well split. I think Edge had the lead in a lot of people's minds that he was going to get the win, but you really didn't know. And any one of them could have gotten the win. So the near falls and the near taps all just were super hyped. And there was one in particular where Edge hit two spears and he goes for the pin on Roman. And then Daniel Bryan, just in a move of desperation, pulls Charles Robinson out of the ring.
Right. To break up the pin. That was great.
And I was like, man, like, this is getting me. Like, this is wrestling at its best for me, because you really don't know who's going to win. You can't predict it, and it's got me on the edge of my seat. And I think, yeah, credit to all three of these performers for giving me that.
Yeah, from a match standpoint, it was solid start to finish, delivered on pretty much every aspect. And I won't crush your thunder here, but until the end, I'll say that, until the end.
So you weren't a fan of essentially how this one played out. You didn't like the concerto?
Well, I mean, not that part. I didn't care about that part, but it was just literally how it ended.
Okay. All right. Well, I will say Edge kind of gets the chairs out. He's going for a full concerto. He's got Daniel Bryan down on the ground with one chair under his head. He's got Roman on the other side of the ring, down and out with a chair under his head. He's going, you know, old school rated R superstar, going to bang up everybody. And then, of course, Jey Uso comes back out to help. Distraction. Roman then, of course, gets up, hits the spear on Edge out of nowhere to take back control of the match. Roman then sees what Edge is all about, goes for his own concerto on Edge. Daniel Bryan is knocked out because Edge did get one hit on him. And at that moment, Chris's heart broke because Roman Reigns takes the lifeless body of Edge and the lifeless body of Daniel Bryan, stacks them on one another, and gets the pin on both of them. Once again, we see Roman Reigns standing tall at the end of a WrestleMania.
I know, it just killed me. Like, it needed to be Edge. And going back to what I was saying before about, you know, if they were to go on tour, like, I told my wife before WrestleMania started that if Edge was champion and they go on tour and they come anywhere close to Charlotte, I'm going.
Yeah.
You know, like, I didn't get to see Edge as a child. Like, he was gone before we started going to events as adults. And, like, that would have been immediate. Like, if Edge, Rhea Ripley, Bianca Belair, whatever, like, if that could have been the card, sign me up. I don't care how much those tickets would have cost. I would have gone.
Yeah, ringside.
Yeah, right? And so it was really just disappointing. I am on record as saying, as much as I do not like Roman Reigns, this is the best version of Roman Reigns. And so he does, it's deserving. Just like Lashley, I mean, it's a good gimmick. He's on a run. I didn't have a problem from that, but it killed me to see Edge lose here. And the only solace I got was that I still had some fans there in the crowd to give me some quality Roman boos.
Yeah. Well, he's a heel now, so at least you're supposed to be booing him.
I know. He got less boos than I thought when he first came out. You know, it was a very mixed crowd and probably more cheers than boos this time around. But you know, I wasn't totally let down by my fans, you know.
Yeah, no, it's fair. I wanted Edge to win. You know, I wanted Edge to win. I think everybody wanted Edge to win, even though I said our predictions were split. But let's be real, guys. You all wanted Edge to win. Everybody wanted to see him reclaim that moment that was stolen from him. And it just didn't happen. But, you know, Roman's a beast right now, the tribal chief, and they're just sending him to the moon.
It's true.
They want him to look as good as possible, no matter what. And Edge, probably to his own fault, doing what all classic, you know, legends do, and doing what's best for the business after you, versus what's best for you in that moment. And it breaks our heart, but, you know, in the end, that is how it shook out.
I mean, I'll take this version of Roman over any of the previous versions of Roman that we saw at the end of WrestleMania. You know, so that's like the one silver lining is this is the best version of Roman I think we've ever seen.
Yeah.
But it's still a little tough. But the match was great, and I don't take that away. For as much as I hate on Roman, you know, he performed here, and the match was really solid way to end the night.
Yeah. And I think kudos to WWE. Both main events were the best matches of their given nights.
Easy call. I had that here if we were going to talk match of the weekend, but you just summed it up.
Yeah.
Both main events.
Both main events. And that's how it should be. You know, I really liked that Cesaro-Rollins match. I really did. But credit where credit is due.
Yeah.
Night one, no doubt, Banks-Belair. And night two, no doubt, Roman-Edge-DB.
WrestleMania 37 returned with a vengeance and was the perfect event for WWE to welcome fans back into the arena. The large-scale production value, mostly fantastic in-ring performances, and energy of the crowd created a perfect formula for two nights of wrestling. For me, it was one of the best Manias of the last 10 years with its exciting and historic matches that will almost certainly have a place on many fans' top 10 lists. Hit us up on social media to share your thoughts on this year's WrestleMania and your predictions for what will come next as we make the push towards SummerSlam. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this chapter, be sure to hit the subscribe button to get new chapters of Geek Ketchup every 2 weeks on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, CastBox, or wherever you listen to your podcast. Be sure to follow the show on social media, and you can find us on Facebook and YouTube at Geek Ketchup Podcast, or on Twitter and Instagram at Geek Ketchup Pod. Links to all these accounts are in the show notes below and on our website, geekketchuppodcast.com. Stay saucy, you nerds.